Now, I'm very pleased to welcome Alan Rees from Hornchurch-based independent financial advisors, Alan Rees Associates. So, big welcome to Phoenix FM, Alan.
Thank you very much, Scott.
You found us all right, no problem. Lucky you got trapped outside.
Yes.
Anyway, finance is a pretty wide subject, so perhaps we could start by telling us in broad terms just exactly what you do.
Yeah. Well, in fact, we actually do everything financial, whether it be... whether it be personal, corporate, mortgages, protection, anything really that helps people with their financial well-being.
Okay, well, let's start at the beginning. How do you get things moving? Somebody wants to have a chat with you about it.
Well, we will speak to anybody that has a particular issue they wish to discuss. And every initial meeting is without obligation. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we work on a results basis. So unless we provide the solution that suits you as an individual, then there will be no fee payable.
Do people need to come in to see you, or can you arrange home visits?
Yeah. Preferably, we're set up at the office for any eventuality. It is better to come to the office if you can. But obviously, in special circumstances, we can arrange home visits.
Are there any areas where you can't offer advice?
At the moment, we've chosen... We've been established since 1991, and we covered the full range, mortgages, investments, pensions, etc. But because of the change in legislation, we decided 2 or 3 years ago not to provide formal advice for pensions and investments. Mm-hmm. Although we do have a lot of pension and investment clients, we observe as to their current situation and guide them in the right direction. But we can't formally advise on those issues. Other than that, it's anything financial, we can provide advice.
And of course, because you're independent financial advisors, you're not tied to any particular organization.
That's really essential. And in fact, that's our main raison d'etre. We are totally independent. Mm-hmm. We're regulated and authorized by the FCA. We're not tied to any insurance company, bank, building society, advisor network. We are totally whole of market and totally independent.
Now, as you just mentioned, you've been trading for almost 30 years, and between you, your partners have clocked up about 80 years in the business. So I guess in that time, you've witnessed a whole range of market conditions. So you must be pretty well placed to look at the market conditions over the longer term. And I think I'd be right in saying that investors should always consider to invest in the longer term, because the idea of making a fast buck is only for fools. Would you agree with that?
It certainly is. There's no easy money to be made. And as we've seen, unfortunately, there have been certain scams that have been perpetrated, and investors have lost money. So we do guide or express extreme caution when it comes to investing long term. It's a long life that we all have, we hope, and a long working life.
Yes.
And people work very hard and should go to great lengths to protect their money. There's no easy buck, I'm afraid, and nor should there be, and should be looked at with great suspicion.
Okay, now we've briefly looked at long-term financial advice, but that's just one string to your bow, is it not? So you want to pick one of the others?
Yes, it's an area that people always say to us, oh, it's never going to happen to me, but protection is so important in our view, particularly anybody with a young family. So often we hear people say, I don't need to insure for loss of income, I don't need to insure for a critical illness, it won't happen to me. And sadly, it does happen. We've had 25-year-olds that have had heart attacks and not insured, unable to continue in their jobs, and consequently find themselves in financial difficulty. So we do urge great caution. And when you actually look at the cost of protection these days, it's well worth spending that money. When you find it's the equivalent of a pint of beer is, say, £5, you can get an awful lot of insurance for so many pints of beer a month to cover yourself and your family for the future.
So are you looking there at life assurance or health assurance?
All of it, actually. Health insurance is important.
Yeah.
What we do find more than anything where people do not look seriously at their situation is income protection.
Right.
Very many firms do not provide proper sickness benefit when employees are ill, and they rely on SSP. Statutory sick pay is a very low figure, uh-huh. and is not sufficient to pay your bills and other outgoings when you are ill, particularly if your firm is not paying you. So that area is one that does cause us a lot of concern, particularly if you're self-employed. Most self-employed people, if they're not working, they're not earning.
Yeah.
And that then presents a problem when it comes to paying mortgages, housekeeping, just putting food on the table. So that sort of area is one we do encourage people to really look seriously and say, yes, I do need that insurance.
Is that expensive?
Not terribly. It depends on the occupation to an extent. It also depends on whether you want it from day one of the illness,
yep.
or you say, I can survive a month if I'm ill, or 2 months,
yes.
and then you can defer payment, which brings down the premium. So there are ways of tailoring your needs accordingly.
What's the difference between life assurance and life insurance?
Well, nothing really. It's a sum assured. It's terminology. But really what you're saying is, I want life cover for, say, £500,000 if I die within a certain period of time. And if that does occur, then the payment is made. There's also a policy called whole of life,
right,
where you can insure the amount for your whole. That's a bit more expensive, as you'd expect, because it's covering a long period of time. But again, has its place if your circumstances warrant it. What I would stress, nobody is the same. And that's where we really do score. Every case we look at is different.
Mm.
And we find that we need to tailor their particular needs to certain solutions. So we will look at individuals' circumstances, take from them exactly the areas that they are concerned about, ask them to look at the cost, obviously, and to make sure that the cost and the benefit are acceptable, in which case then you can protect yourself for the future.
Now, this, of course, is very different from the... Is it PPI?
Oh, PPI is something completely different, yes.
Which we hear so much about these days.
Yeah. PPI is, well, it tells its own story by the amount the banks have had to put aside as compensation. It had its place, but not for everybody. And it seems, unfortunately, that it was being sold to anyone and everyone, hence the furore that occurred and the amount of compensation that's been paid since.
Okay, did you want to briefly look at mortgages and equity release?
Mortgages, probably our core business is mortgages.
Yeah.
We specialise in mortgages. My previous history prior to setting up the practice in 1991, I was actually chief executive of a building society, so I've seen the mortgage world from both sides.
Yeah.
Mortgages are important, and one of my big hobby horses, oddly enough, is schools. I find all of us come out of school, we've had no education on money. And it really is a big hobby horse on my part. In my school, for example, my senior years, we had four periods a week on Latin. Now,
I remember that.
I've never used it at all other than to translate mottos. Yet if those four periods had been spent on money and how the economy works, it would have been of far greater value. And to this day, I still don't find there's enough education on money and what makes the world tick. And
How many people know what the difference is between APR and all these different things?
All these sort of things, And the example we have, good or bad, is our parents. When we come out of school about money, it's either a good lesson, a bad lesson, or an indifferent lesson, but not a proper lesson. And people should have a comprehensive education on money. It would save an awful lot of trouble, and people, I think, would avoid a lot more debt if they knew how money works and how their lives work around it.
Now, you mentioned that mortgages are one of the most important aspects of your business. I just wonder how on earth anyone today can get onto the property ladder. I mean, you've got to put down a fortune before you...
not necessarily. We can get loans with just a 5% deposit. And to an extent, it is all relative, because even in my young days when we bought our first house, the problems were the same. The figures were a lot different because of inflation. I think my first wage was £6.05 a week. And believe it or not, I actually saved money out of that amount.
Yeah, I can believe it. Yeah.
But it is all relative. My first mortgage payment was £11 a month. And we lived in London at the time, but all we could afford was a house in the wild of Canewdon, which not many people even know exists, but that's where we were driven to if we wanted to buy a house. Yes, it is a bit more tougher now, but there are ways to deal with it. We do find, and it touches on another area where we're very strong, is equity release.
Right.
Parents are releasing money from their homes to give to children for their deposits, so there are ways to deal with that as well. And I think parents like the idea of seeing their money being used in a good way now, not everybody waiting for them to die before the children get the money and then it's too late.
And of course the interest rates are far lower than it was in our day.
Incredibly lower, yes.
Now, you just touched on equity release. Now, that obviously perhaps isn't for everyone, but tell us a bit more about it.
Again, I think it was the horror stories of the late 80s that probably coloured people's judgment. And
do you remember those adverts? Was it
I do.
Two comedians kept saying, the money's yours, take it out, and then the property market collapsed.
Yeah. Everything was wrong at that time. The basic idea was very good. The application was very poor. There were very high loan to values that were being issued on equity release. Mm-hmm. And as you rightly say, the property market collapsed dramatically in 1989. Mm. I should say following the very poor budget by Nigel Lawson, but that's another matter. But that really did cause the problem. And for a year, the property prices actually dropped by 25%.
Yeah.
Very dramatic. But there was a thing called MIRAS in those days, which was mortgage interest tax relief, and that was taken away at the same time, and that really exploded the bubble at that particular moment. Having said that, the 25% reduction was recovered a year later. So the property market is very resilient if you can hang in there, but that was a particularly bad time. What it did do, because equity release had only just been brought to the market at that time, caused all sorts of problems with those equity release loans at that time. For example, if the debt exceeded the value, the lender was going after the borrowers for the difference. That can't happen now. That's been stopped.
Right.
So there are protections in place now. Also, people now, once you have an equity release, are guaranteed to stay in their property to the day they die, irrespective of movements in the property market. So there's a lot more protection there. And when you do look at certain people who haven't got pension arrangements, are suffering a bit financially, but want to live in the house they've always lived in for 40 years, equity release is a very good tool for their well-being.
What happens if they've got the equity release and they have to go into care? What happens then?
It depends on how it's set up. And again, you can put protections in place.
Right.
And it is a very hot issue, as you know, politically. The politicians can't quite make their mind up how they want to fund it. Yes. Well, that's true. Far be it from me to comment on that one. As the man says, you might think that I couldn't possibly comment. And I think that equity release propositions will change in the light of whatever is decided. But there are protections to be had. And when you do think that most people want to leave something for their children, it does become an issue and does require advice. And we would welcome anybody that is contemplating that situation to come and talk to us. It's very important.
And there are two types of equity release, aren't there?
There are, yeah. The one that we don't advocate whatsoever is the reversionary one. We do not like the idea of selling part of your house, that someone else owns your house and you become a tenant.
Right.
As an individual, you haven't worked all your life to become a tenant. The straightforward equity release, where you just release capital from the property, is the one that we mainly recommend. You are still in control of what happens. You can still move house if you want to.
Yep.
You can take the mortgage with you if you want to, subject to the lending criteria. So there's a lot more flexibility in that arrangement. The other thing I would mention, because it looms large, is inheritance tax.
Right.
And it is linked to it, because as an individual, anything over £325,000 in your net estate is taxable at 40%.
Right.
That is a very high figure. It hasn't moved with inflation as everything else has, and the inheritance tax limit is way behind where it should be. Now, London and the south of England in particular, an average house can easily be £500,000-£600,000.
Indeed.
If you're an individual and you've got no mortgage, you're paying 40% on anything in excess of £325,000. And I don't recall anybody putting the Chancellor in their will as for a share of the equity, but that's what will happen unless you make arrangements. Again, equity release can play its part there, because it reduces the estate and would reduce the inheritance tax liability.
And is equity release tax-free?
Yes, because it's capital raising.
Right.
Yeah, at the moment, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, that could change.
I would hope not, because it's income that and capital gains that should be taxed. But this is your own capital.
Yeah.
If you sold the property, it's capital. If it's main residence, and you pay no tax there either, if you make any profit.
Right. Any other points that you'd like to make on anything?
I think everybody needs a financial health check regularly. Mm-hmm. We check our cars, in the main check our bodies. But a lot of people go through life without proper financial checks. And we recommend that on a regular basis, particularly if your circumstances change. Unfortunately, with divorce and situations like that, money obviously is of prime importance, and it always has been and it's quite even our own clients, where they may have been clients for many years, have come to me and said, we're divorcing, what should we do? We actually sit down and work out with them financially the best plan for them before they go to solicitors and start incurring all sorts of costs.
And the solicitors are the main beneficiary.
Particularly, unfortunately, where there is an argument. Dare I say it, the more there is an argument, the higher the costs are. And we do recommend strongly that no matter what the problems might be between a couple, to actually put their thinking caps on and say, okay, yes, we might not like each other anymore, but let's be sensible about the money. Let's sit down with our financial advisor. Let's work out the best way forward, so that we can move forward and not have too much argument about the future.
Good stuff. All right. Well, thank you very much indeed for all that, Alan. And thanks very much for dropping by to see us. So
it's a great pleasure.
Good stuff. If anybody has heard you today and would like to know more about you, what should they do?
Either contact us, our telephone number, website details are available. We would welcome talking to anybody about any financial matter.
All right, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.